Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Governor Hochul will join us with possibly some very big news on housing and other things from the state budget negotiations that have been underway for months. That'll be at 11:10. Now, as usual, on Wednesday mornings, after Mayor Adams' Tuesday news conferences, our lead Eric Adams reporter, Liz Kim, joins us with excerpts and analysis and to take some calls. Mayoral control of New York City public schools, and we'll ask the governor about that too, where the city lands in the conceptual budget agreement just announced by the governor. How did the city do in all of that? And a few other topics to touch on. Hi, Liz. Thanks for coming on, as always, on Wednesdays.
Good morning, Brian.
Now, shortly before the news conference yesterday, I see the mayor spoke at a breakfast for the group called the Association for a Better New York, and he was met by a group of protesters there, and he was asked about that. Do you want to set up this clip?
Sure. So the mayor was speaking at an event held by a group called the Association for a Better New York. That's also known as ABNY for short. And they routinely invite elected officials to speak to their members, which are made up of both private sector leaders and also nonprofit leaders. But it's typically seen as an event where an elected gets to speak to the business class. And here we had the mayor up on stage, and protesters rushed him, and they got surprisingly close to the mayor, I think in a way that astonished a lot of reporters, certainly, and probably members of the audience. This is not something that happens, I think, ever at ABNY. I spoke to like a veteran City Hall reporter, and she told me she had never seen this. So the mayor was asked about whether there was a breach in security for him.
And these protesters, we should say, these were not pro-Palestinian protesters.
Correct.
In this case.
Very good point, Brian. Yes. So, in this moment that we're in, we are seeing a lot of anti-war protesters. And, you know, we've seen that, you know, at a fundraising event for President Joe Biden. This protest was very different. It was an anti-Adams protest. And what these protesters were yelling was that the mayor was favoring the rich over the working class.
So, Mr. Mayor, was this a security breach that was dangerous to you and others?
And so it was not a security breach. They know that is one thing the mayor can do, the mayor can handle himself. And I saw them walking on the stage. I could have easily given them a signal to do so. He had the correct amount of steps. If he would have went beyond those steps, he would have had a problem.
What steps is he referring to?
He's saying that he makes a signal to his security detail of when he wants them to intervene. And he is saying that the fact that they got so close to him wasn't because his security was somehow asleep at the wheel, but because they were waiting for the mayor's signal as to when to come up on the stage. This was quite a disruption. And it's a disruption that comes at an event, like I said, it's before sort of the movers and shakers of the city. And it was at a moment where the mayor was trying to make his case that, you know, he's followed through on his pledges, on the pledges of his campaign to help the city through the pandemic recovery, you know. And this particular protest, which gets at his sort of working class bona fides, is also very important because that's essentially the tension here, right? He wants to be seen as a voice for the working class, but he also wants to be pro-business and a fiscal hawk when it comes to managing the city's finances. And that comes with inherent conflicts. We see how that's playing out. You know, he's made cuts to libraries, schools, parks. Those are cuts that arguably hurt those on the lowest rung of the city's economic ladder. So how does he reconcile that and his rhetoric and his identity as a defender for the working class?
Does the mayor get points for restraint here? I can imagine what might have happened if he did signal his security people to intervene and there was some interaction that who knows how serious it would have gotten on either side with the protesters who were rushing the stage.
I don't think so, Brian, because if you watch the video, it wasn't like his security detail then, you know, politely asked the protesters to leave. You can see like one of them was either pushed or they fell down the stairs. It was sort of a rough escort out the building.
Hmm. All right. Next topic. Governor Hochul, who's going to be on about 15 minutes, has announced a conceptual agreement for the state budget. Your fellow city politics reporter, Jeff Colton from Politico, questioned the mayor on the way he's framing items in the budget related to the city. There's a lot at stake for the city in this state budget. We're going to play the question first.
Talking a lot about the wins, you're really focusing on the good stuff, but I'm seeing a lot of compromise in the budget. I mean, you talked about mayoral control, there's compromise, and then, you know, a housing tax break that isn't expected to bring in as much development as 421A, half the debt limit increase you're seeking, less migrant money than you've asked for. So is it as good as you're saying as a whole, or are you actually getting a half loaf from Albany?
Are you getting a half loaf only from Albany? And here's the mayor's response.
People view this glass as half empty. I view it as half full. I'm part of the half full team. I know what we were up against going to Albany when Tiffany, Ingrid, and Diane and others were coming back and stating that, you know, there's a real challenge. But they always came back with the same report. Speaker, Majority Leader, and Governor, they want to help Eric.
So, Liz, that's very general. I view the glass as half empty. I mean, as half full. I'm a half full kind of guy. But it didn't get to any specifics of any of these things on housing or mayoral control of schools or what he wants the governor to do with respect to locating migrants in places other than New York City. So did he ever get more specific on that as the news conference went on?
No, and the reason for that is because the details of the budget are yet to be announced. So I don't think the mayor can get ahead on any of these proposals that we have heard are part of the budget deal. But I like the way that Jeff phrased that question, because this is the annual assessment that we make out of every mayor, right? Did the mayor get what he wanted out of Albany? Can this be framed as a win for the mayor? The mayor did talk a lot about housing. And that, you know, that the fact that housing is that there's a housing deal being discussed as part of the final package is very important to Adams. That there is as the mayor has said, there is a 1% vacancy rate in New York City. So there is a severe housing crisis. But I would also argue that, you know, the state needed a housing package, too. They were under significant pressure, especially after last year when they failed to deliver reform on how to build more affordable housing. They were under tremendous pressure to get something done. So I think that for sure, it's a win for the mayor. It's a win for the governor. It's a win for all the lawmakers in the legislature when it comes to housing. But, you know, we will see the contours of that deal, as Jeff hinted at in his question. You know, is this enough? Will it be enough to spur housing?
And similarly, I'll be asking the governor about mayoral control of public schools, which reportedly she reinserted into the budget process after it had been taken out to be dealt with later in the term. I guess she wants Mayor Adams to get this on paper now that he has control of the New York City public schools. But reportedly, members of the legislature are pushing for a compromise that would give him control, but with some strings attached, including especially in the immediate future, complying with the earlier state law that requires reduction of class size in New York City, which the mayor has been resisting. So he was asked about that push and pull yesterday, and he said this.
And so if it's about give backs or negotiation, you know, that's part of the process. That's part of life in government, the willingness to compromise.
But again, that was general on control of public schools. I may have to try to get this out of the governor, but do you know, Liz, if the enforcement of the class size reduction is part of the mayoral control package that may have been agreed to?
That's what's being reported out. And mayoral control is something that if the mayor were to get this as part of the budget, that has to be construed, I think, as a win for the mayor. Coming into budget negotiations in Albany, the expectation was that he would not get mayoral control as part of the budget negotiations, that lawmakers would elect to make the mayor wait on it. And this is because, for a variety of reasons. One, you know, he's facing dismal polling. He's not a popular mayor in this moment, so he doesn't have a lot of political capital. And it's also driven in large part by the fact that he's made cuts to areas including schools. So the fact that, you know, that this is now back on the table, this is potentially back on the table, that would, you know, I think that that is something that the mayor could call a win. But like you said, it hinges on class size. And I think the mayor's remark yesterday by saying, like, you know, we had to make some compromises, I think he's kind of foreshadowing the fact that he does have to make some significant deals. And it may likely be on class size. This is something that the mayor has been unhappy about ever since the law was passed in 2022.
Because of the cost, right?
Because of the cost.
Hiring a lot more teachers, creating potentially a lot more spaces.
Correct. And it's, you know, it's a cost in terms of both the hiring of teachers and also where does the city find the space to hold these additional classes or additional schools to comply with this law. You know, the new law would cap, just to give you an example, it would cap classes at 20 students in kindergarten through third grade. And that number would rise slightly as you go on to older grades. But, you know, the law was a culmination of a very long movement in New York City by education activists to bring down class sizes. It's based on studies, but also surveys of parents and teachers who say they want smaller classes. But it's also important to note that the law stands to benefit the teachers' union because it would potentially grow the number of teachers at a time when enrollment has dropped off at New York City schools because of the pandemic. So, you know, this brings a lot of players into this negotiation, right? So the UFT could be a very beneficial ally to the mayor on something like mayoral control. They have been previously, you know, prior to, you know, what we've heard now, you know, they've kind of voiced some skepticism about it. This idea of peeling back mayoral control is not just a conversation that's been happening in New York City. It's been happening across the country where there is this, you know, whereas there is this concept of mayoral control. In fact, Chicago elected to remove mayoral control. So a lot of this was, we've been heading into this direction of should we as a city not, I don't think remove it altogether, but consider reforming mayoral control in some ways. So now we have this moment, like I said, where I think the teachers union holds a lot of leverage in this conversation. If they want, you know, they will ask the mayor, like, you know, what can you give us? And what he can give them is he can give them a commitment to, you know, to following through on the law of reducing class sizes. But, you know, it's expensive, right? So I'm sure the mayor wants something from the governor, like, can you give me more money? You know, there is already money set aside for this, but I think the city will always argue that it's never enough.
The New York Times reports, and this wasn't in the news conference, I don't believe, but Liz, that Mayor Adams is pushing to hire Randy Mastro, former deputy mayor, to Rudy Giuliani. The Times, for example, describes Mastro's reputation as being a veteran litigator known for his aggressive tactics. And we were just talking about Randy Mastro on the show the other day because he's representing New Jersey in the lawsuit against the mayor's congestion pricing, or really the MTA's congestion pricing that the mayor says he supports. Can you confirm that Mayor Adams wants Randy Mastro, of all people, and if so, why?
So that was a story that came out of the Times late yesterday, and no, the mayor was not asked about it at the press conference. The Times was sorting unnamed sources, but, you know, following that, other outlets have also, using unnamed sources, come out and reported that this is something that the administration wants to do. Mastro would be a replacement for the current Corporation Council, that's Sylvia Hines Radix. It's important to note that this comes as the mayor is facing some serious but also difficult legal cases. There's the sexual assault lawsuit that was filed by a former transit police employee back in 1993, and there's also multiple investigations into his campaign. But as you said, this poses an interesting question, not so much for the mayor, but for the city council, because the city council must confirm the appointment. So they get to vote on this. And, you know, as the Times article states, you know, he is known as a bulldog, you know, and he's taken, I think, some interesting stances, to put it generously. I think some would argue that he's been on the wrong side of a lot of cases, which were directly against the city's interests. As you said, you know, he's representing New Jersey in the fight to stop congestion pricing.
If he becomes the lead lawyer for the city of New York, is he going to then start defending congestion pricing?
I think the idea is that he would step down from that case. And, you know, that's interesting because, yes, I mean, he should, because it's about his client's interests. And that's why I think this is a very interesting question for the council, because this is not someone who's new to government. As you said, you know, he was a deputy mayor for former mayor Rudy Giuliani. So he has government experience, albeit under a Republican. But, you know, there are things about him and you know, clients he's represented that some, especially progressive lawmakers, will argue don't represent the values of the city and the laws of the city. So, you know, that this will become a question. And I think if a public campaign starts to build, you know, against having him be appointed, then I think you will start to see more electeds start chiming in and really discuss whether or not, you know, they should go ahead and confirm the appointment. And it comes at a very inopportune time for the mayor. I mean, it's never a good time to spark a battle with the city council, but we're also in the midst of budget negotiations.
And here's a little bit of how the New York Times put the likelihood of Mastro joining the Adams administration. It says Mr. Mastro notified his law firm, King & Spalding, about his likely departure for the position. That's the Times quoting a person who was familiar with the matter. So we will see what happens and the conversation that it starts in New York City if Randy Mastro really does become the top lawyer for the city of New York. We thank for this week, and as always, our lead Eric Adams reporter, Liz Kim, who comes with clips and analysis after the mayor's Tuesday news conferences. Liz, thanks as always.
Thank you, Brian.